The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. As the United States pulls out of Afghanistan, terrorists move in.
I mean, look, we already have half a dozen of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capital cities that have fallen to the Taliban since late last week.
Andrew Cuomo resigns as governor of New York.
The best way I can help now is if I step aside and let government get back to governing. And therefore, that's what I'll do.
We'll look at what's next for the Big Apple.
There'll now be a new governor, a woman. She's supposed to be a moderate Democrat.
And I'll discuss masks on children with Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Hopefully this will be a temporary thing, temporary enough that it doesn't have any lasting negative impact on them.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. In April, President Biden announced it was time for the United States to pull troops out of Afghanistan. Completely. Quickly. He said at the time the United States had accomplished its mission of denying terrorists a haven in the country. But as the troops began their exit, the Taliban emerged from the cracks and caves and quickly launched a new reign of terror. They brutally and rapidly took over city after city much quicker than the Biden administration saw coming, with little resistance. I spoke this week with Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher, a former Marine captain.
I have never seen us bug out this way since 1975. This is the worst. And we're just running away, Mike Gallagher.
Well, 1975, I think, is the apposite analogy. I mean, this is the Saigon moment, and it is going to have an adverse impact on American deterrence around the world. If you're watching the way in which this is being done, you're questioning America's commitment to our friends, commitment to our allies on the ground who fought with us. And I would say this, reasonable people can disagree about our force presence in Afghanistan, how quickly to wind down, whether we need an enduring presence. I am for an enduring presence that secures Kabul and Bagram and allows us to conduct not just counterterrorism operations, but a great power competition in the region, particularly given China's interest in Pakistan and the Gwadar port. However, I don't think anybody, even the most ardent proponent of getting out of Afghanistan can defend the way in which this is being done and just how ham-handed it is. Everything from just announcing the withdrawal on, you know, the anniversary of September 11th to not having a plan for taking care of, you know, the SIV visa issue for interpreters that risk their lives to work with us. This has been an absolute disaster from the White House. And again, I just fear it's going to undermine the credibility of America's deterrent around the world, not just in Afghanistan.
It's a bug out. Biden's bug out. And this was not what Trump proposed. They intended to leave. They intended to leave an Afghanistan that was intact, supported by air support. And this is a bug out. And by that, I don't even think the embassy will be open in a month, Mike Gallagher. Do you?
No. I mean, look, we already have half a dozen of Afghanistan's 34 provincial capital cities that have fallen to the Taliban since late last week. I mean, this is happening at a much more rapid pace than our intelligence community predicted, but it should have been predictable given the speed with which we bugged out. I mean, it's just a heartbreaking disaster. And, Hugh, if the goal was to free up resources to focus on China, focus on the Indo-Pacific theater, an understandable goal, was actually counterproductive to that effort because we have been forced to send a carrier from the Indo-Pacific to cover the withdrawal. I think the first time since the early 2000s that we've had to do that. Because we are now trying to adopt some overwatch posture in Afghanistan, that means we're going to further stress our Navy and Air Force assets, which are precisely the assets that you will need in the Indo-Pacific theater. So it fails on its own terms. It fails under the idea that you're trying to free up resources for the China fight, because it's not freeing up resources for the China fight. This is a surrender. It is a black mark on U.S. foreign policy. And if you add on to that just the overall confusion of our policy in the Middle East, the confusion of friends and enemies, and the really pathetic attempt to resuscitate the lifeless corpse of the Iran deal, you're going to see another disaster in the Middle East that will screw up our entire ability to get serious and tough on China, because we're going to be forced to deal with chaos in a second priority theater.
The Biden bug out also reminds of Jimmy Carter, because at the same time that we are withdrawing from the world, we are not spending any on defense. I can't even believe that we have $1 trillion in infrastructure, $3.5 trillion in additional spending voted last night. It hadn't come to the House yet, but something will pass. They're going to spend trillions of dollars on top of the $3 to $4 trillion we spent last year. So $8 trillion, more than we spent on World War II and one combined in the Vietnam War. And there's no money for defense in that. It's unbelievable that the Democrats have really adopted, we're going to be a left-wing socialist European country with no defense.
At the highest levels of spending since World War II, as you point out, but they are unwilling to spend the minimum necessary to prevent World War III. I mean, that is the bottom line right there.
Go to townhallreview.com for the rest of that conversation. Midweek, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo shocked the country with his announcement that he would resign his position in 2 weeks. This followed nearly a dozen accusations of sexual harassment leveled against the governor, detailed recently by the Attorney General of New York. K.T. McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump, discussed what's next with the state while on with Kevin McCullough on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
What's your take on where kind of the dice lay on the table now in New York?
A Democrat is going to have a really hard time losing in New York State, a Republican having a very hard time winning in Republican Republican in a
it's
very
like
heavily
a 7-1 advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all won and lost in the suburbs around New York City, on Long Island, in Westchester County. And one of the thoughts about Cuomo was, for some Republicans, they said, leave the guy in, have him twist in the wind. He's so damaged that any Republican who presents a really a good alternative could, in fact, beat a wounded Cuomo. And so, for example, Lee Zeldin, who is running for governor and is a friend of mine, is in fact my congressman. He is a terrific candidate. And so he would be I think he beats Cuomo all the time. Now, there'll now be a new governor, a woman. She's supposed to be a moderate Democrat. We'll see how much she's embraced by the very far left. Democrat Party of New York is very far left. That's AOC, Chuck right. Schumer, all the people who, we know what their routine is, right? The loony left. And we'll see whether she's embraced by the loony left of her own party. There's just a lot that's going to happen in New York. Now, one of the reasons New York is in so much trouble is not just, it's been Democrat governance, the Democrat governor, Democrat House, Democrat Senate. But financially, the picture of New York, the way it works, the business model of New York City and New York State is very damaged by the bad economy and COVID, because mm-hmm. people are fleeing the high rates of taxes in New York State, and they're going to the low tax states. They're going to Florida. They're going to Tennessee. They're going out of New York because they just don't want to carry the tax burden of New York. And I think New York is going to have a very hard time. But all the people who are donating or paying money into the revenues, if those people are all leaving, how is New York going to survive? Particularly because New York is one of the heaviest union states in the country. And the legacy of the union payments that New York has to make to firemen and civil servants and policemen who retire at almost full pay after 20 years of working, that's right. So difficult for any state to carry, New York in particular.
Well, and I think that beyond the economic picture, which you have described very well for someone who writes about national policy, national policy and foreign policy and national security and so forth, you did just fine on breaking your home state down there domestically, KT. But I think the other issue that is really going to come into play is the safety of people in the city and in the suburbs and even in upstate in places like Buffalo and Rochester. There are places where crime is out of control. And it was not only Governor Cuomo, it was the statewide Democrats that put this bail reform law into place, got it signed by Governor Cuomo, and the current lieutenant governor that's stepping up, she was on board for all of this. She stood by the governor as all of these things happened. People were put into nursing homes. I don't know that just because she calls herself a moderate that it's necessarily going to give her a free pass. But I also expect Letitia James to jump in. I expect Bill de Blasio to jump in. I expect who knows who may say, I want to take a run for this. Maybe Kirsten Gillibrand doesn't want to be a senator anymore. Maybe she runs for the gubernatorial seat. So I think that it's just become a wide open kind of circus for the Democrats. And they've got plenty of time to narrow and whittle what they need to do. But it is going to throw a bit of a curveball at someone like Lee Zeldin, who was up until now being able to say, I'm the perfect anti-Cuomo for all of the problems mm-hmm. that we've got. Look at me. I'm the guy that will be the opposite of that.
Well, but in a lot of ways, though, this favors Lee Zeldin, because you're right. All these Democrats are going to jump in thinking, wow, what a great opportunity. I'll be governor of New York State. I'll have, you know, a lifetime.
And you know how badly de Blasio wants to do that. You know that there's just an itch inside of him that's like, I'm going to go there and show him that I could be better than him.
Well, but remember, I mean, Cuomo at the top of the ticket in the Democrat Party, he sort of blocked anybody's upward advancement in the Democrats for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to that, so he's any Democrat, male or female, national leader in New York, the governor of New York, is always considered a presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Is always someone who's in the sort of top 15 of people who are going to run for president or be tapped for vice president. So there's even more ambition in this foot race of all the people you've mentioned, if not even a whole lot more, to jump into this race thinking, not only can I be a senator and an important one for life, number two, boy, I'm all of a sudden presidential timber. So the Democrats will fight amongst themselves. And the biggest civil war right now in politics is in the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans,
right.
We sort of figured out who we are, okay? Whether you like Donald Trump or don't like Donald Trump, the policies of Donald Trump are the policies of the Republican Party now. The Democrats, they've got the loony socialist left, and then they've got what used to be the moderate Democrats who were pro-national security and pro-police, and we'll just see where that civil war goes. I think they're going to whack each other over the head for months now, and Lee Zeldin, meanwhile, can stand on the sidelines, letting them hurt each other, destroy each other. And you and I both know, I mean, he's a very reasonable, moderate guy. He doesn't get people mad. And he will do very well in those all-important suburbs of New York City.
Yeah.
I think he's got a real shot.
Coming up, should we put masks on children?
Hopefully this will be a temporary thing, temporary enough that it doesn't have any lasting negative impact on them.
My conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Dr. Anthony Fauci has been the face of COVID-19 response through two administrations. There's probably nobody who has faced as much anger and frustration as the science on this pandemic seems to shift regularly. But Dr. Fauci is willing to sit down with tough questioners like me if the person asking the question respects the professionalism involved and doesn't yell at Dr. Fauci. I don't yell, but I do press. In my recent interview with Dr. Fauci, I hit him with one of the highly volatile questions that has parents frustrated coast to coast. Why maskless children in K-3? It's about children K-3. And as the grandfather of three of them, and I talk to a lot of parents, they don't believe masks are a good thing. They believe they are developmentally difficult to deal with. They can hide developmental disabilities. They impair speech and hearing, and that they're not very effective. And boy, they feel this strongly, and it's what the UK felt. My grandkids were in school in England last year. Why do you disagree with the UK specialist and with the Wall Street Journal this morning article by Dr. Makary and Dr. Meisner?
You know, Hugh, that is a difficult situation because you really do have to balance the risk of transmission versus the real risk. And I'm not putting down what you're saying. It's not comfortable, obviously, for children to wear masks, particularly the younger children. But, you know, what we're starting to see, Hugh, and I think it's going to unfold even more as the weeks go by, that this virus not only is so extraordinarily transmissible, but we're starting to see pediatric hospitals get more and more younger people and kids, not only numerically, but what seems to be more severe disease. Now, we're tracking that. The CDC is tracking that really very carefully. So it's going to be a balance that we would feel very badly if we all of a sudden said, okay, kids, don't wear masks. And then you find out retrospectively that this virus, in a very, very strange and unusual way, is really hitting kids really hard. That's the thing. Nobody feels comfortable at all about having children be put in a situation where it might ultimately, the way some people study, have some impact on them. But hopefully this will be a temporary thing, temporary enough that it doesn't have any lasting negative impact on them. And getting back to what you and I both agree very much on, Hugh, is that the way to get out of all of this is to just get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can. If we could do that, the level of virus in the community would be so low that we wouldn't be talking about things like masking indoors, even for vaccinated people, and masking in the school.
Now, Doctor, I want to stay focused on K through 3 and 4 for a second, because that's the only place where I find significant, I mean, genuinely deep departure from CDC confidence among people who are center right and center left. We know the numbers for kids. 794 kids age 12 and younger die in vehicle crashes. 70 a year die from choking. 22 children and teens are shot every day. Dorothy Novick cited some of these numbers. She also cited, and she's at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, that the total number of children who have died from COVID as of July 29 was 358. That is, of course, a tragedy, every single one. But the doctors at work in the Wall Street Journal today say the transmission rate for children 5 to 17 was 0.5 per million, or roughly 25 patients. They say there is no conclusive evidence that children transmit the disease to each other. And they do say there's conclusive evidence about children with myopia, children with learning disabilities. I want to read this. The possible psychological harm of widespread masking is an even greater worry. Facial expressions are integral to human connection, particularly for younger children who are only learning how to signal fear, confusion, and happiness. Covering a child's face mutes these nonverbal form of communications, can result in robotic and emotionless interaction. So, doctor, what did you base it on? CDC came out and said K through 3, and I'm only focused on K through 3.
Right.
Why did you do it?
So, first of all, a lot of the data that you're talking about transmission among kids, dates back to the Alpha variant, not necessarily all the most recent data on Delta. Delta is different. So, Hugh, I promise you something, because I respect you, and I think everything in that article that just came out from Makary and Meisner, I think should be taken seriously. But we better go back and make sure those data are really solid, the same way you're asking me. And I will. I'll go back to the CDC and make sure that the data that they're talking about is really solid. So let's do both. Let's just check both those things out and make sure we're really talking about apples and apples and not apples and oranges, and make sure we're talking about transmissibility of Delta as we're seeing what it's doing right now.
What they say today, and you've read it, obviously, is that there is
data.
Of course. Yeah. So let me go to my second great danger, public education generally, after a year of lockdowns and now mass controversies, and they cannot be dismissed as right-wing nuts. It's left, right, center, it's parents. Public education has taken it on the chin, Doc. They are really losing support. Teachers unions are viewed as villains. School districts are divided with parents screaming at each other. This is horrific for public education, which, you know, all three of my kids went through 12 years of public education. I don't know about you, and I were parochial school kids, but this is not good for public education because of division over COVID.
You're absolutely right. And that's the reason why, again, the solution, Hugh, it's not easy. It's not easy. The solution is, first of all, we all agree we've got to get the children back to school, in school, full time. Some schools have already started. My own daughter is an elementary school teacher, and she is in the middle of it all in New Orleans. So I know full well from my own family the difficulty that they find when you need to get the children into school and keep them there. The solution, for goodness sakes, is let's get all of these people who are the 93 million people who are eligible to be vaccinated. Let's get them vaccinated. That's where we should be focusing our attention. If we do that, Hugh, this will all go away. The kids will be in school without masks if we do that.
Well, I agree. I want it mandated. Let me for teachers, I want to go to the third danger out there, doctor, which is to the idea of nonpartisan public health. I am very concerned, not about this crisis, but about the next one and the belief that is growing that the CDC and the FDA and everybody else is somehow being politicized. You know, I never believed that. I never, ever believed that. And now I hear it all the time. And you know how you get banged up by conservatives. Not me, but a lot of conservatives bang on you. And I know you don't care. You take it. You're a pro. But do you think the general idea that science can be trusted? You know what I'm talking about is we're hemorrhaging credibility from the people that we used to reflexively listen to.
Yeah, and we've got to continue to make sure that all of us on both sides, when I say both sides, I mean the people who look at it from the outside as well as the inside public health community, have to be very sensitive to that. But I can tell you, Hugh, having been in seven administrations to see all of the things that go back and forth, this is not being political. I am not in the CDC. You know that. I'm at
right,
the NIH.
Right.
And you know, we make the vaccines, we test the vaccines, but I'm in on the discussions. And I can tell you, it really is not politicized. They're doing their best. They're not always correct. We know that. They tend to correct when they do find that they're going down the wrong path. But I don't see political influence at all in that.
There's much more to my conversation with Dr. Fauci. Go to townhallreview.com for the entire interview. Coming up, Congress inches closer to approving the Biden spending spree and pure socialism in the United States.
That's more money adjusted for inflation than the United States spent to fight the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, World War I, World War II, build the interstate highway system, and win the Cold War.
Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. To get Republicans on board, the Senate approved a massive infrastructure bill that was still less than half of what the progressives were demanding. The Senate compromise was over $1 trillion, but the far left wants that pushed out to $3.5 trillion. Economist Stephen Moore says even the bipartisan Senate version is far too much. He was on with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer, out of Chicago.
$4.7 trillion in a day, that's not bad.
Yeah, maybe one of the darkest days in the history of the United States Senate, actually. I mean, this is a catastrophe for our country, what is going on in Washington. You know, the left promised that if they took back the chains of power in Washington, that we would have a transformation in our society. And boy, they weren't kidding. And so, wait, what was the number you said, $4.7 trillion?
Yeah.
It was 3.5 plus, 3.5 plus 1.2.
That adds
up. Your math is good.
Yeah, thank you.
Your math is good. So, and I want to remind people, you know, that this is on top of the $1.9 $6 trillion, right, that we passed back in March for the blue state bailout for states like Illinois and California and New York and so on. And so that's $6.5 trillion, folks, $6.5 trillion that Biden and Pelosi and Schumer have authorized already this year, which, by the way, I think I mentioned this last week, but it bears repeating, that's more money adjusted for inflation than the United States spent to fight the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, World War One, World War Two, build the interstate highway system, and win the Cold War. I mean, this is you know, fiscal insanity. I believe it will cause a financial crisis that will make what happened in 2008, 2009 look like a picnic.
Really?
And
What give us the form on that crisis you see on the horizon?
I think it will come in two forms. I think we're going to see rising inflation, and those numbers show about 5.5% inflation. So what's happening, so people understand, you know, the Friday jobs report, which is a really good jobs report in terms of the number of jobs, 1 million new jobs added. But the Biden said, and look at this, folks, raises for workers. Paychecks went up 4% over the last year. And I'm like, yeah, but you know what? Inflation's running at 5.5%. And if you get a 4% raise, Dan and Amy, I hope when you do your negotiating with your owner's taxation, you tell them, hey, you know, if you're only giving me a 4% raise and inflation's going up by 5.5%, I'm losing money on the deal. So people's paychecks are shrinking, and I think you're going to see accelerated inflation, and I think you're going to see a stock market correction. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be 2 weeks from now or 3 months from now or 6 months from now or a year and a half from now, but I do believe there will be a substantial correction because no great nation in the history of the world has ever borrowed and spent its way and printed money to prosperity. It just doesn't work.
So of the $1.2 trillion that was passed in the wee hours of the night, 4 a.m. this morning, what amount is going to go to be, you know, to help roads and bridges and waterworks?
I lost track of what happened yesterday because I was watching a bit of it last night. So just so people know the chronology here, they got 19 Republicans mm-hmm. who voted for this atrocious $1.2 trillion so-called infrastructure bill, which, as everyone knows, is just a green energy bill in disguise. It's false advertising. And, you know, if you own Tesla, by the way, you're coming out big time because the government's going to recharge your car from now until it runs out of, you know, or the tires go flat for free. You know, we're going to have free charging stations all over the country for people's electric cars. And it's got, how about this one, Dan? $50 billion for Amtrak. Yay!
Yeah,
I can take that choo-choo ride I've always wanted.
Yeah, we got a Governor Spaulding here in Illinois has commissioned to study high-speed rail. It's back on the table now with all this federal funding money because you know what the problem in Illinois, Steve, is? We can't get from Rockford to Moline fast enough.
Well, you know, I mean, you guys know what happened in California. The last time we did this under Obama, we spent, I believe the number was about $20 billion on the super highway, the super high-speed train from Los Angeles to San Francisco. And they started building out in the middle of nowhere in like Fresno. And they, after spending $20 billion, they said, this isn't going to work. They never built it. So we spent $20 billion. You're my money, folks. And it never carried a single passenger. But this time it's going to work because we do need to get people from Moline to Springfield, no question about that. And by the way, they've been talking about this for years and years and years, and high-speed rail is a huge waste of money, as is all of this stuff. And you know, we should be cutting government spending now. And the COVID crisis is basically coming to an end. The businesses are reopening. And, you know, normally what happens in the course of events is when we have a crisis, you borrow during the crisis, as we did during the pandemics. And then when the crisis is over, then actually you're paying down that debt.
Coming up, a fifth grade teacher takes her school board to the woodshed.
School board, I quit. I quit your policies. I quit your trainings. And I quit being a cog in a machine that tells me to push highly politicized agendas on our most vulnerable constituents, the children.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy, And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As the agenda of critical race theory has reached families, many parents have finally come to the conclusion that this is a step too far. They don't want it in their school districts, where many have already begun implementing the highly divisive curriculum. Parents are standing up. Teachers are taking a stand on principle as well. Here's Salem host Bob Franz on AM 1420, The Answer, out of Cleveland, Ohio.
A teacher named Laura Morris spoke at the Loudoun County, Virginia Public Schools School Board meeting. She was there to continue the discussion that has been going on in the last several meetings in Loudoun County that have gotten very, very loud, in some cases modestly violent, pushing and shoving and grabbing of microphones and so on and so forth. In fact, they didn't even have a meeting last month because of everything that was going on. Parents are outraged at the promotion of critical race theory and this LGBTQ mafia agenda, the rainbow mafia agenda, in which teachers and kids are going to have to say things about people that are simply not true, about what sex they are, and about made-up words like Z and Zay and pronouns and all this other crap. Parents have been pushing back, so the school board decided to keep the parents out. Now I believe they were allowing just 20 parents in the school board meeting room at a time. So in other words, it was virtually empty so that nobody could really show support for the speaker or whatever. It was much more intimidating for the speakers, of course, to talk to the school board members. But this teacher spoke, and she's, like I said, she's a teacher, not a parent in this case, but she's done. And she wanted the Loudoun County School Board to hear her. This is one of the most difficult things that I have had to listen to about this issue.
My name is Laura Morris. I have been a teacher in Loudoun County Public Schools for 5 years and a teacher for 10. In that time, I have learned so much, being on the cutting edge of educational technology and working with a diverse population of students that I have loved. This year, I have the privilege to follow my amazing fourth graders up to fifth, and I have been excited about this all summer. On the other hand, this summer I have struggled with the idea of returning to school, knowing that I'll be working yet again with a school division that, despite its shiny tech and flashy salary, promotes political ideologies that do not square with who I am as a believer in Christ. After reading about your lack of consideration for the growing population of concerned citizens in this division, clearly evidenced by this empty room tonight where you shut the doors to the public, as well as the emails sent by the superintendent last year reminding me that a dissenting opinion is not allowed even to be spoken in my personal life, going so far as to send a form to my colleagues and I encouraging us to fill it out if we hear one another speaking against the controversial policies being promoted by this school board and adopted in this county. Not only that, but within the last year, I was told in one of my so-called equity trainings that white, Christian, able-bodied females currently have the power in our schools, and that, quote, this has to change. Clearly, you've made your point. You no longer value me or many other teachers you've employed in this county. So since my contract outlines the power that you have over my employment in Loudoun County Public Schools, I thought it necessary to resign in front of you. School board, I quit. I quit your policies, I quit your trainings, and I quit being a cog in a machine that tells me to push highly politicized agendas on our most vulnerable constituents, the children. I will find employment elsewhere. I encourage all parents and staff in this county to flood the private schools.
I don't cry much, unless it's something, usually tears of joy for my kids or my family or something, but she almost got me. She almost got me. This is a dedicated teacher being forced from her profession by the woke school board, the CRT, the LGBTQ mafia, forcing good, decent, honorable people to leave their positions because of the color of their skin, because of their gender or their identity, because they are perceived as oppressors. simply for being born white. And that they're supposed to affirm people's young children's fantasies and psychological conditions by saying, yes, you really are a dragon. Or yes, Steve, you really are a girl. She can't do it. She shouldn't have to do it. She won't do it. So she quit rather than be forced.
I quit your policies. I quit your trainings. And I quit being a cog in a machine that tells me to push highly politicized agendas on our most vulnerable constituents, the children. I will find employment elsewhere. I encourage all parents and staff in this county to flood the private schools.
Her last line there might have been the most important line. Encouraging all parents, flood the private schools, flood the charter schools, take up homeschooling, do something to get your kids out of those toxic, non-scientific, in fact, science-denying atmospheres known as the public schools. Get them out. Get them out as quickly as possible, because those schools are only worse for the fact that Laura Morris isn't one of the teachers in them anymore. Good teachers who actually care about the kids will turn on their teachers' unions. Good teachers will turn against the school boards and the administrations. And they will not allow children to be judged based on their skin color. They will not allow themselves to be judged on their skin color. To be told that white, Christian, able-bodied females or males have too much power in the schools and that has to change. Telling them we don't value you. In fact, we want less of you. That doesn't make for a good school system. These ridiculous policies of diversity, equity, and inclusion are destroying schools. And once you destroy schools, what do you destroy along with them? The children. And once you destroy the children, what do you destroy along with them? The adults they are going to become. And meritocracy will be a thing of the past. Working your hardest and getting rewarded for your achievements will be a relic of a bygone era. Sitting back and waiting for your handout, your equitable distribution of whatever it is that somebody else have, will be the new normal. This is what they're guaranteeing.
Coming up, was Barack Obama's birthday a super spreader event?
They weren't wearing masks.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo resigns.
The best way I can help now is if I step aside and let government get back to governing.
They'll take a closer look.
The governor basically presents himself as a victim rather than as the perpetrator.
They'll also look at what happened in the wake of his departure.
There'll now be a new governor, a woman.
Fairfax County, Virginia pushes its radical agenda on kindergartners.
Teachers are saying, we love this guide, and it doesn't matter what our school district tells us, we're still going to share it with our kids.
While a Loudoun County teacher, also in Virginia, resigns as a result of her conviction.
I quit. I quit your policies. I quit your trainings.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Most people wouldn't fault former President Barack Obama for having a big birthday celebration as he turned 60 last weekend. But the Delta variant sent COVID cases spiking across the country, and many Democrat-run cities and states were cracking down and requiring masks. And while there was a criticism in the media over numerous events taking place, there was a suspicious silence when it came to President Obama's birthday bash. Here's Salem host Charlie Kirk.
So Obama turned 60, and we're supposed to care about this. Now, this is just a general comment. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this. A general comment on humanity. People that really care about celebrating their own birthday, like where they make it a really big deal, like it's my birthday, I have to do this, generally not really big fans of those types of people. people that kind of shrug, like, yeah, I guess it's my birthday. That's my style. It's like, yeah, I guess I'm just going to go to work. Like, thanks for the cake. Okay, let's find whatever. So Obama put on this massive party. Total narcissism. Obama really wanted to have the 60th birthday party. He really wanted to have this birthday bash. But he had a little bit of a problem. You see, the narrative on the Democrat side is we have to be really worried. We have to act as if things are really terrible right now to try to justify more power for ourselves. They said, huh, how do we have a party with all of these anti-American narcissists while getting, oh, we're going to say we're scaling it back. That was their big thing because of the Delta variant. So they had Beyonce, John Legend, Chrissy Teigen. I thought Chrissy Teigen was canceled because she basically told people to go kill themselves a lot. Nope, she still came. Who else was in attendance? I'm sure we have the whole list there. Anyway, so they said, oh, we're scaling it back. And instead, they built this superstructure. We can get a picture of this on the live stream. You guys can check it out at charliekirk.com. Steven Spielberg was there. Jay-Z was there. I'm talking about a tent city that looked like something out of a Harry Potter film. Now, you've never seen anything like this. It's one of the largest tent structures ever. And they say, oh, no, we scaled it down. They didn't scale anything down. And then pictures were leaked from the DJ, and he will be sent to the camps soon, audited, and his family will be targeted, where he took pictures and he started posting it. And what did we find? We found that Obama and Michelle and Jay-Z and John Legend, they weren't wearing masks. They were inside enjoying their 90% white neighborhood in Martha's Vineyard in their $12 million home in a superstructure tent, all while complaining about racial justice, not wearing masks. Yet your child this fall might have to wear a mask. In fact, if you walk into a restaurant here in Las Vegas, they will scream at you if you're not wearing a mask.
Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. And sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richard, David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Harley Eide, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.